Welcome.
Everyone but me.
Welcome.
And I can't help feel ladies like and gentlemen,
to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and the economy is picking up because everybody's managed to snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Dr. Richard Miller. Welcome to the program, Richard.
Good morning. Or what time is it there?
It just turned midday.
Am I talking to someone in the future?
Technically, yes.
How far in the future are you? It's right now 3 p.m. here.
Okay, it's about, 21 hours ahead of you.
Wow. Now that's a hit. You're okay. In New Zealand. What's the weather like right now? How's your weather doing, your forest fires?
No. That's Australia that has the forest fires. In New Zealand, the summers, we don't generally have fires in forests because most of our forests are rainforests. We have plains fires in the South Canterbury Plains where they have lots of dried long grass and alcoholic farmers.
Ah. And what was his name, my precious?
That would be Gollum.
Yeah, there you go. Do you know what a golem is, actually? A golem is a Jewish term. Are you familiar with that?
No, but I thought it was a media term.
No,
you know,
golem
somebody's got a golem in a local newspaper.
Yeah, golem is Hebrew for an artificial life form. What they do is they build a body out of material, and then they infuse
You're talking something totally different. You're talking about a golem.
Yes.
Whereas a golem is G-O-L-L-U-M, as opposed to G-O-L-E-M.
Well, pronunciations have to do with roots.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Don't worry about me. What would you like to talk about today?
Well, you know, funnily enough, I was actually going to ask you that question because I haven't had you on the show for a while, and I have no idea what you've been up to.
Well, Matt Stein is just recovering. His wife is recovering from cancer, and we're trying to use one of our power tools having to do with the difference between health and healing. I've just completed a new book. I haven't decided that. Originally, it was called Power Tools for the 21st Century, and it was the 8 protocols I developed for Navy SEALs to make us supermen. They were toys, you know, things like brain drivers, things like that. Now, there's some concepts called mythic living where you work with archetypal forms in metaphor. And one of the things I did this last year, I had like 9 surgeries, primary surgeries. I got titanium and all over my body. You ought to see me trying to go through an airport. And when I did these surgeries, I used my automobile as a metaphor. I have a Datsun 1976 280Z that I restored. And so when I changed the rust in the left panel of the car, I put a gauze in my gut. You know, metaphor. And I did this, and today, I'm 68. I'm probably in better shape than I ever was, man. I feel great. Albeit the body is a mechanical thing. These exercises that I'm doing are in different layers of consciousness. You can work medicine, for example, in your health using metaphor. What happened is that this person had a great deal of anger in her for a long period of time, and it was starting to affect their relationship with other people, her husband, etc. And what happened next was that she started to get some irritation in the body, which eventually escalated to cancer. The anger was causing the cancer. And what happened next is she got so concerned about her cancer, she forgot about the anger, revisioned it, and now there's no reason for the cancer. It's the way your subconscious tries to communicate to your consciousness when you're doing something that's counterproductive or not, you know, kind of like your true path, your purpose on life.
Yeah, I find that so many times. There's, I don't know, employment, for example. If there is ever an existing phenomenon that prevents you from doing what you should be doing in your own life, it's being employed for the most part. So many people are working all day, every day, and by the time they come home, they don't have time or the energy to work on their music or write that book that they've been wanting to. But interestingly enough, there was an article in a New Zealand newspaper a number of years ago that said being unemployed for about a year is sometimes the source of some of the greatest entrepreneurs and writings of our time. And I found that to be really a self-evident truth, but it depends on whether or not you use all that free time to improve yourself and do those things that you never had the time to do, or whether or not you use that free time to pity yourself and think that not having a job means you're not worth it.
So with that in mind, I chose to title my book, rather than Power Tools for the 21st Century, I've decided to title the book Taking Personal Responsibility for Your Own Evolution.
Mm.
It's all about your relationship to yourself and what your true purpose is on life. You know, Aleister Crowley, I like to quote from Aleister Crowley, sorry about that, used to call that your magical memory, keeping a diary of what's going on at that exact moment and getting snapshots rather than what we normally call confabulation. You know, little snapshots of that moment, how you're feeling about something. You know, feelings are a higher form of the physical plane. There is no difference between the physical and the emotional except in detail. And really, that's why the higher part of ourselves always communicates with illnesses and things that require us to feel something. It's part of the scales. Go ahead.
Yeah. What you just said there to feel something, I think it was just when I was about to go on holiday at the end of last year, I was starting to feel kind of disillusioned with all of this, you know, doing the radio show and exposing scumbaggery and all of that kind of stuff. And
Do you do this once a week?
No, 5 days a week.
Usually
working 6 days a week. On top of that, doing other people's radio shows, appearing as a guest.
I've had several friends that said they had you on.
Yeah, and I led a protest this weekend down Queen Street, kind of thing, with the giant megaphone and the full body camouflage gear.
Oh, that's great, man! That's great. That's
scary looking.
All hail Eris!
That's
rules.
But what I was going to say was the reason why I was feeling like I couldn't go on or anything like that was two reasons. Number one, I was just exhausted because I do so much work. And number two, I didn't feel anything different, right? You know what I'm saying? When sometimes in a rut and it's because your perception of reality hasn't been blown apart recently, you know? Being a conspiracy talk radio show host, you get used to people saying things that suddenly makes you question your whole reality. And I'd gotten addicted to that feeling like a drug, and it hadn't happened for a while.
Well, catharsis, that place of nexus.
Exactly. And my conclusion was that I hadn't suffered enough yet. All right? I needed.
You want to be a Jesuit? I've got a little cat of nine tails for you. You just hurt so good.
Well, what happened was I went up to my sister's place up north here in New Zealand And instead of being listened to, as I'm used to being, as a radio show host, I was kind of getting interrupted after every second sentence. I was being insulted, saying that all the things that I say are all nonsense and irrelevant and not worth listening to. And I had this intense rage and dissatisfaction as a result of that. And I had a profound realization. People who actually think that way, regardless of how close they are to you, was the result of their brainwashing and enslavement. And it's not my fault that they're slaves, okay? Yeah. And it's not my place to take it personally and blame them for it either. After all, and this was the really good part of the realization, holy cow, I'm Vinnie Eastwood. I'm ridiculously awesome. Some of them, you know?
Well, you have a great accent. I have to give you that one, man. No, you really do. I love it. It's disarming.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like the Obama regime. And I also wanted to... the context out of it was saying, not only to myself as a realization, but also to a lot of the people who listen to this radio show, who's perhaps their partner, who is not awake yet, or they're still living with their families who are not awake yet, and they get discriminated against. It's not your fault that they're still slaves and brainwashed. You're not going to be capable of waking them up on your own. It usually takes a cumulative effect and something bad to happen to them, you know, like being arrested by a police officer.
Well, that's what it, the difference between health and healing, what I was trying to say. You know, you have options on that internal landscape thing, and you can go one way or another in how you choose to approach something. You know what that's called? It's called thought forms going into memory water. And then precipitating from psyche into matter. We create our own reality with our thoughts. And so that's why, you know, you have to be very careful about the landscape. You know, I in this one chapter, I was writing about honesty and why you want to be honest. And the one possibility is that you're looking back and you don't like what's happening, you know, if you get caught or punished. And so you're honest because you don't want to get busted. Or you could look in the other direction, and there you want to do it because it's the right thing to do. Now, which way opens up which doors?
And the irony being that if you are honest, especially with police officers, the likelihood of you getting busted increases.
Yeah. How's that? The world laughs at you. Yeah, I remember that joke. It's been around a long time. The police officers. Well, they're on us. That's what it's always been about. I'm an outlaw, but not a criminal. But I have my own medical marijuana card, so there.
Well, you lucky devil, you. There's unfortunately a lot of people in New Zealand. We've got the highest arrest rate for marijuana than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, it must be really nice with that long ultraviolet that you have down there.
Yeah, actually, in the international in the international competitions for the strength of marijuana, New Zealand is usually right up near the top tier.
I saw some houses that were built with it. I saw that. I posted it on my website. Excellent trip. That's the reason. It wasn't about the high you could get on marijuana. It was the fact that it could be used for a virgin white paper. That's why it's illegal. I mean, you know, it is a strong fiber.
Mm. Well, the strongest natural fiber, I mean, other than perhaps silkworms. And that's basically a very interesting thing. Like, I've got hemp pants and a hemp shirt that my mother bought for me for one Christmas. And all of the other cotton things and what have you that I've been wearing for a similar period of time are getting shredded or getting faded or
wearing
something
that,
like that.
Are they? Yeah, your 501 blue jeans.
See, what's interesting is that the hemp clothing will go out of fashion before they go into disrepair.
Probably, but I've got a zoot suit, so there. And it's a Swiss banker's thing, and it was like a zoot suit. It was an old Armani, and it's good to go, man. Especially when I go to Amsterdam, and it doesn't matter.
There's another funny thing about it. Amsterdam apparently had like a million French people go to Amsterdam every year just specifically for the marijuana. And then when people in New Zealand started talking about marijuana tourism, the government says, oh, there is no evidence for anybody would want to visit this country if we legalized marijuana.
I know. It's not about that anyway. It was the clouding of smoke. You know, there's still, I have a friend that runs the marijuana museum there, and his wife runs the Sensi Seed Bank. And they have a place called Nomads, which is upstairs. It's a disco that opens about 1 o'clock in the morning. And we're sitting there on the floor eating with our fingers, and in walks a belly dancer, private room. And only she's not belly dancing, she's doing 14th century folk dancing. Amsterdam. Fabulous furry freak brothers. Gotta tell me that, man. Fat Freddy's cat. They're all there.
All right, and we'll be right back with Dr. Richard Allen Miller right after the break. NW Botanicals is his website. Back in a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I had a Jehovah's Witness come to my door one time and say, hey, did you know that God and science are getting closer together? And I was just like, well, you know, that doesn't surprise me, considering all the founders of society of science, like Newton and all of those other guys, happen to be really deeply religious. My very special guest is Richard Miller, and you were telling me over the break how you had a background in physics and people were approaching you with paranormal things.
I worked for the military. Yeah, that's what I did, yeah.
Would you be able to explain to us kind of how you went from that very solid scientific analytical approach to getting into sort of the more esoteric and maybe even occult field?
Well, okay, yeah. Back in my day, there were a lot of claims like firewalking and like Jack Schwartz was able to take needles and stab them through his arm, pull them out, and stop the bleeding instantaneously. The Navy wanted to know how to do that.
Okay, I always wanted to know how to do that. So
no, I mean, like if you got shot with a bullet, how to stop your own bleeding.
Oh, wow.
Just like with your mind. Okay, and so Menninger Foundation was set up in Topeka, Kansas with biofeedback, the first biofeedback that measured autonomic functions like brainwaves and heart rate and things like that. Before that time, people weren't really doing that. They listened to you with a stethoscope, but they weren't measuring with strip charts on how your heart is changing and, you know, those kinds of things. And the military wanted to make super soldiers, you know, they could control that with their mind. And you can, and with biofeedback. And all kinds of, functional MRIs and toys. There is a bunch of toys that you can, you know, train your body to, let's say, jump 50 years of meditation in 3 years using brain drivers. You can get to the same brain states that it would take a meditator 50 years to do and get there quick. Now, the problem is all quick shortcuts are just like to grandma's house. There's big bad wolves and dangers. Obviously, Aleister Crowley talked about drugs as a valid form of magic. It is, because magic is the art of changing consciousness at will, which means it's basically a higher form of physics. What magic is to you will be technology in 10 centuries. Breaker, breaker, 1-7, come on. That's called telepathy, and yet we're doing it in our mind's eye with toys, which means we can get there using microwave temporal lobes, that kind of thing. And so that's the kind of work I started. And when I was my classic physics, when I'd watch someone walk across the fire, a shaman or a Sherpa, a white feather shaman that would walk up Mount Rainier barefoot. How does he do that? We don't like to know how to do that ourselves so that we could walk in snow and bake it naked. That's the movie I was telling. There's a movie, science fiction movie called Subject 2, and it's about DNA explant, modifications to allow immortality, and what would that mean if you never died? An interesting movie. Yeah, he was watching Tyranny, which is a, you know, a move, a series on the internet about, you know, Poland in 2021 and using remote viewing to predict the future and trying to do tyranny and fight with it. That's an interesting little series. Now, magic is basically where I started because it's kind of like a discipline where you train your mind so that you can change reality. And there are things that you can do in this regard using toys that will get you there quicker, like a brain driver, you know, frequency following function, brain entrainment, that kind of thing. You can learn languages very quickly that way. There's all kinds of things that if you have a certain kind of breathing rate, your functional boxing, the way you could fight is improved. With your chi has to do with some forces that we don't even understand yet, but we recognize the validity of it, like in acupuncture, microtubule, electromagnetic fields around the body, things that you can do with that you can change other people's realities. You know, not laser main, you know, where you're doing sleight of hand, but the next level of it with your mind.
Mm. We were talking about the possible limits of this, and the subject of the Jedi, as in Star Wars, came up, and Jedi powers. You know, this is not the conspiracy theorist you're looking for.
No. May the Schwartz be with you. Yeah, I know. It was great, Starballs. Look, that there is no question. I wrote a paper in the 70s called The Omega Principle, and it was about the energy that patterns randomness. Now, if you want to think of it that way in terms of how you take your body as a water vehicle and you set up a radiant pattern form that goes into the environment, that's a good visualization of what really goes on. Structured water is the first foundation in all systems of magic. It has to do with electromagnetic fields and, you know, things like that with witches. And getting a witch off your trail, you cross running water. Make a note. Your little secrets, yeah. They're all, it's like Walt Disney, you know, used to talk about the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and he'd draw this circle around himself to keep the demons out. It's all starts in your mind's eye.
Well, this is also another interesting point. Even if there wasn't anything mystical going on, you can actually see the results of your desires becoming reality. Myself, for example.
Exactly, correct.
It's a daily basis. I'll be thinking about something, and all of a sudden something happens.
Well, that's because your brain wants to agree and make your reality feel like it's working for you. It's not there to separate reality. It's there to make you believe it.
Mm. And conversely, if you're thinking positively or thinking about what you want, if you're thinking negatively and only focusing on the things you don't want, those are the only things you will get. You know, my girlfriend's in that current position whereby she hates her job.
Oh, that's great, man.
And hates everybody else who is basically making her job harder around her.
Yeah.
And I kept saying to her, you know, you've got to think differently about this. You've got to start accepting other possibilities that if you're sitting home after going to work all day and you're all upset and stuff, and then you come home and you're still upset, you ain't going to actually change the next day at work. The next day at work is going to be just as bad, if not worse.
Well, there's the local Selma cartel where they grow all the pot here in Oregon. They have a little saying that says, "I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't have believed it." Mm. You know, we create our realities. That is a fact. And that's what the importance of values and belief systems. One of the things I trained Navy SEALs was how to change a belief system like you were with a pair of clothing. You know, the old what the bleep concept, where the shaman sees the boat out there on the horizon and nobody else can because they don't have that concept yet. And that's the part that we're trying to elevate now, leaving everybody behind. Just kidding.
Well, there's also another thing I want to put into here is the context of what you perceive to be pretty or something that you like. Like, for example, over the weekend, I told you I was leading a chemtrail protest and I was wearing full body camouflage and things like that. And, you know, I had a lot of comments I had a lot of comments on that photo, yeah. Specifically from women saying that I look really, really sexy in that camo. And I put a response on my YouTube page, and I said I had a few comments from girls on my new profile photo that I look sexy in camo gear. It's strange. Women in the West find men in uniform hot, whereas women elsewhere in the world run screaming from them in fear.
Yeah, well, that's because I wear aluminum, and I'm an old, grumpy old man. See, you're still, you know, you know, that's signs, you know, where you wrap your head in aluminum foil, you know, trying to shield out the microwave. You know, this place is such a sewer. Any self-respecting alien wouldn't want to come down here and slum in force space. God, they get all kinds of creepy crawlies. It's places down here. You know what Morgellons disease is? We figured it out. It was from the Challenger. What happened is the nematode experiments crossed with life forms in the xenosphere, and the trail where they fell is exactly the same areas where they found the live nematode. And all of a sudden, now we've got something out of X-Files with things, your skin wiggling with these little metal worms, you know, that are basically a nematode. Now, that's the good news, because nematodes are easy to kill on your body. So people that have Morgellons, there is now, once you know what it is, you can go after it. That's been the main problem with nematode and things like that, was that basically nobody knew what Morgellons was. The Center for Disease Control still hasn't identified it. It's interesting.
Mm.
You've heard of Morgellons? Yes.
Yeah, it's the one where kind of fibers start growing out of your pores, sort of thing.
Yep. It's a new nematode, is what it is.
Some people thought it was a result of chemtrail activity and nanotechnology that self-replicated.
What happened was the Challenger. It happened right after the first Morgellons started showing up, right after the Challenger experiment. I wrote this for Nexus. Basically, the nematode was the only thing that survived that accident. And where the debris fell on Earth, they found living nematode. And some of it had mutated into this new thing and it's airborne, which means people probably breathed it in their body. You know, that's how people get nematode, is walking in bare feet and things like that. Nematode is easy to clean, you know. I would recommend an absence ritual, you know, where we all got out and drunk and had a party and then sterilize everything in the middle. Making absence. I make an absence with, you're getting it now. It works. Wormwood will murder almost everything. And then you would go back through your gut with green clay or a pyrolytic clay of some kind, you know, washing it out. And then do it again for the eggs. Nematode, like Hydra, lay eggs.
Now, a friend of mine in Australia was talking to a doctor, and he was talking about Morgellons disease with her, and she says, oh, yes, I've got a couple of patients who have got Morgellons, but it doesn't exist.
Well, that's really interesting to the person that's got these wiggly things coming out of his arm. What do you think that is then? You know, it's pretty scary. And I wouldn't want to have anything creepy like that. You know, chemtrails and HARP they tried to use all of those things to control the weather, you know, like they do silver chloride in the local clouds for airports and things. But what's happening on Australia is that particulate matter from all those forest fires is going to cut the light out of the trees and their forests. And it's called global dimming. And when that occurs, you will get weather changes. And what's happening is it's changing all over the world right now. I think they had in Europe, they said something like, they had 9 currents and now it's down to 4. You know, there's only 4 basic currents now in Europe on the way the air moves now. Instead of 9, they're changing. We are in a global dimming situation or a weather event. The weather is going to change for everybody. It's real strange weather here where I live, Oregon.
Now, global dimming, that's not a reference to the average intelligence of people living on this planet, is it?
What do you mean? Oh, no, yeah, really? Yeah, and leaving everybody behind. No. Good play on words. I'll have to remember that one. No, it's how much light is hitting the actual plant from the sun. And last year in the United States, our global dimming for 2 months was down 10%. But in Russia, where they had all those forest fires last year, it was 35% for almost 4 months. That is what's changing the weather, is the amount of light the plants are hitting. You can actually, from space, look at the color of the earth. It's browner. We're in a drought, a serious drought right now. And it's all part of the global dimming.
Mm. Well, is that because when the sunlight comes through, hits the ocean, evaporates, and then creates rain clouds, so hence less sunlight, less evaporation?
Well, carbon dioxide, yeah, and the amount of carbon dioxide because the light that's hitting the trees. What photosynthesis, everybody's always wanted to know how photosynthesis is. I'll do it the way Richard Feynman does it. When a photon of light hits water, what happens is that Feynman says like likes like. That means all the positive atoms go up there and all the negative atoms go down there. And what happens next, you have a battery just from the water and the reaction of light. The way cold fusion works is that they do this by adding deuterium and some other lighter elements so that when you get this separation, you strip hydrogen. And that's why they call it hydrogen fuel. And I was going to do my 280Z on that, on a, you know, Brown's gas type of thing. And I chose... That's a really lovely car, man, just like my body is. What I did is I'm converting it this year to alcohol. I'm going to run it off my garden. I just grow some comfrey and make Jack Daniels back in the backyard there and run my Z off it. If I put Redline oil in the car, I won't even need the Arabs or the Teamsters.
See, I'm way ahead of you. I already can make myself run on alcohol.
I know, we all do that. It's that kind of alcohol, you know, which molecule you want to use. I was always partial to absinthe, where you do wormwood, because when you caramelize the sugar, it heats up the wormwood, and then when you luge it with cold water, the difference in temperature is where your green fairy comes out, and it's a rare translucent green molecule, and that's how you know you got it. It's an actual narcotic that comes out of wormwood when there's a heat, very cold thing. That's with the caramelized sugar dripping it in, and then you hit it with luge of ice water. As cold as you can get is as good as it gets. Garcon. I got to add some more wormwood here.
No, see, that's the same principle as the Clintons' relationship. As cold as it gets, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, between really.
Bill and Hillary. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Dr. Richard Allen Miller.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here that we've got with Dr. Richard Allen Miller. And he was commenting over the break about how much work I do. And I was explaining that basically there's only three things I can do, and I've had to cut out everything else. Like, the three things I can do is this radio show, my videos, and answering personal messages, whether they be from email, Skype, or Facebook. I have had to cut out everything else. Everything. Okay.
Yeah, well, you didn't cut out Bob Dylan. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And that was the interesting thing that really occurred to me, man, is just nothing else really matters. Talking to people is actually, I think, a heck of a lot more immersive and fun and enlightening than perhaps reading their book or watching their or looking at their website or watching their videos sometimes, you know? Horse's mouth, heck of a lot more interesting stuff from there. So Dr. Richard Allen Miller is my guest, and you have a number of things that you wanted to mention that you've put down in the Skype chat here. Fire away.
Well, just basically my website. If you want more information on what I'm doing, it would be at richardallenmiller.com, and A-L-A-N. I have a lot of books out. I've written things like the Anarchist. I was one of the four authors on Anarchist Cookbook. I wrote Magical Mushroom Handbook, Legal Highs. You know, I wrote all the early drug books for everybody. Now I'm a little more grumpy, and no more psychotic episodes for me. I'm just more the big brass bed for Bob Dylan sings about. That's more like what I'm in for now. Reading has changed, hasn't it, for everybody. YouTube has, and the style. I write for a newspaper called The Sovereign. It's out of New York City. It's a skateboarder for just your age. It's radical, you know, militant, blah, 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 you know, for New York City. And skateboarders, you know, someone that might have their hair in different colors. And I write on the new directions of mind control on that. Talking about our food, how they're getting into our food choices and things like that. I just think that it's a shame what's happening now between them and us. It's like I almost sense there's in 1850s, I'm going to say this. In the 1850s, I think there was a close encounter. I think technology was exchanged, and that there are now two races of human beings on this earth, one with space travel and one without. And the discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots, the middle class, is slowly separating, and the types of foods that they're feeding us, it's no wonder everybody in Japan right now is getting bald from the Fukushima, and they're getting fat because they're eating American diets. And I'm watching what's going on in our world with the Walmart shoppers. There's your alien, man. The zombie. It's like they're attacking us on our most basic foundations. I would think that rather than privatizing water, I would like to see food become an infrastructure like a recreational sport. You start in kindergarten and half their playground is a garden, and watch where that goes. I'm too old to do it. It will be probably your children that will make the change in this world. Someone that's under six, probably. That's what I sense. That's what I think is going to happen. It can't go through the current educational system. It will have to be something that changes, like and what was that, Cloud Atlas, the movie Cloud Atlas. At the end of the movie, the way they were teaching, the teacher wasn't really a teacher. She was an enabler, and the kids teach themselves. It was conceptually, it was really interesting. I saw a different construct, you know, of the way you would teach someone something. I don't have the answers, all of them. I'm just a nerd, and so I'm a nerd. You know, I have certain limitations in the way I look at things, and I'm very concerned with education. I think that's where we should start, and we start with food. You know, where it's some kind of not self-reliance, but an assurity like you have with air that you breathe. With the chemtrail things, I guess that's gone now. But, I mean, you know, it's so weird. I remember my website starts off with a quote from Chief Seattle in 1854, about 3 years before the Carrington Effect. He said, "How can man own the air he breathes? How can he own the land he lives on? And we're just caretakers. We're here for a moment. And to have ownership is crazy. It's doesn't make any sense the way we're living." There's a really good set of videos called Zeitgeist that's on the internet. And the one that everybody should take time to see is Zeitgeist Moving Forward. It's a two-hour. It's not the one on 9/11 where they show that a thing was detonations. What this one does is it says we've had 400 years of currency. It doesn't work. And it's time to move on. That's basically, and it includes epigenetics.
Well, there's two things I'd like to mention there. Firstly, when Zeitgeist 2 and Zeitgeist 3 were screened in New Zealand, we had you had to pay $10 to get in. I was the only person who got into both of those screenings for free because I'm Mr. News.
Well, there you go. But they're free now anywhere. On the you can download them, you know.
Well, exactly. But this is just a premiere, and they had to hire a theater and everything.
Yeah.
So you understand that.
They think they're getting something.
And the second is the leaders of the Zeitgeist movement in New Zealand are my friends and everything like that. You know what they all have in common?
No.
Very wealthy parents.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So you've got a group of guys who haven't actually really had to struggle and suffer and work for the majority of their life for some reason. Pretty obvious to me, getting into a Zeitgeist movement which says we're going to get machines to run everything and you'll never have to work a day in your life.
Well, there's that free energy move I've heard of too also. I didn't know that part about Zeitgeist. I didn't. I was watching like when George Carlin, I love George Carlin, when he came on and he said, God has everything, but he needs more money. I mean, really... the whole thing, I had on my website that one building. I had a physicist friend of mine do a calculation on it, how fast, within 3%, it was free fall. It would have taken my SEAL unit probably 3 months to rig it that precision and have it fall. And that there were three buildings that were demolished like that. Pentagon wasn't hit by an airplane. What did it then hit it? And where did that come from? And what happened to that airplane that supposedly crashed with all the people killed on it? And then, it gets better and better. That's the Aurora shooting. There's this woman sitting next to the guy that did the shooting in court, and she is the same mother of one of the dead children in Sandy Hook. How does that work? I mean, really, I'm watching all of this stuff on false flags. Knowing what I know as ex-military, I mean, I just going, I can't believe it. And nobody is reporting it. Not really. I mean, nobody. Even Al Jazeera. I mean, you know, I thought at least, you know, maybe they would.
I did like Al Jazeera. Up until a few years ago, I think. They just changed and they became so mainstream all of a sudden.
Well, they're Fox News now, I heard.
pretty much. And I think it might have happened since the Iraq War, when a lot of their really hardcore journalists and editors and everything like that just simply got blown up and nobody came in to replace them.
I'll give you something about Iraq that's interesting. When I worked in military, I was Navy intelligence, and we knew about an artifact in the south, in the north part of Iraq, in Yazidis country. And Aleister Crowley wrote about it, and then the church came out about 100 years ago with Yazidis, the sacred, the sacred ceremonies of the Yazidi or something like that. It was Joseph Isaiah. And really, it talks about an artifact in the deep catacombs of which the father, Bush, couldn't find. And the second Bush, the reason he invaded Iraq was right after the invasion, we had tomography. I could see where it was. He got on board ship with all his ribbons and everything on, and he said, we got it, the war's over. And then the last couple of years have been a false flag. What it was they call it like a Stargate. It isn't a Stargate. What it is, I don't have no idea because I didn't get it. We knew about it in the 70s. But nobody knew where it is. And the interesting part is, I have a copy of the Yazidis here, so I have the old, you know, because that was one of the things we always wanted to get. It was a big door where demons ran in and out of it, and there was a whole cult based on this thing called the Yazidis. And now the book, Joseph Isaiah's book, suggesting there was a second door, and they think it's in the ocean, but they haven't been able to find it yet, even with tomography. So what does it do? I haven't got a clue. Probably dimensional gate to Mars. Well, I saw top secret documents about Mars before even the moon was. We were never interested in the moon. Mars had water. It was in 1964 when the Mariner 1 went by and it discovered the amount of water on Mars. On my website, I had a picture of the Earth. I have a picture of the moon, and then I have a picture of the ball of water from the Earth. And then I bring a fourth ball in on the amount of water on Mars that they just have discovered, and it's more water than on Earth. It's a new form of structured water that remains a slushy ice down near 100 Fahrenheit, below Fahrenheit. And it's just from the pressures and things like that. If you were on Mars, it would be, standing on Mars, to give you the how thin the atmosphere is, your feet would be at 70 degrees. Your head would be at -5. That's how thin the air is on Mars. And so they tried to terraform it at one point, and it didn't work.
Richard, I'm sorry, we've run out to the end of the show here. So his website, ladies and gentlemen, is Richard Allen Miller, if you wish to observe more of his work. Thank you very much. And coming up next, Sherry Kane and Len Horowitz.